This is Studio 395, a production of the Department of History at James Madison University and its Historical Research Methods course, History 395. I'm Liam Young, a junior history major. Today we'll be talking about heavy artillery regiments during the Civil War. More specifically, we'll be talking about the way that they differed from ordinary regiments and their particular linear-based tactics. I'm speaking today with Dylan Schaefer, a history major at James Madison University. So to start us off, can you briefly describe what linear tactics are and why heavy artillery regiments use them?
Linear tactics are basically you line up in a line almost, and you're standing side by side with a person to your left and to your right. Usually these formations were used to get the maximum firepower out of muskets. The reason why we started going away from them is due to the killing power of the rifle meant that you could hit people at a farther range and you could easily tear up those linear formations. The heavy artillery regiments use them because linear tactics are still used even today for parade ground purposes, and they look very, very nice. And also, too, it goes in line with the nickname for these heavy artillery regiments, the Bandbox Regiment, which was due to their nice appearance, their crisp, clean drills, and the fact that they looked like as if they were just sitting around doing nothing.
In your paper, you describe how these regiments received special banners and had special duties. Were there any specific requirements for soldiers to enter these regiments?
Interestingly, there was no special requirements for these regiments. In fact, some men actually would purposely enlist in these regiments because you had the option with these regiments of just simply sitting around in a fort, maybe digging a few entrenchments, maybe dig a latrine, but you wouldn't actually see any combat. Where if you enlisted in a standard infantry regiment, you had to not only do all that, but you had to run the risk of going in the battle. The heavy artillery regiments were sort of like what the Europeans would term a garrison regiment, and that these troops would be there to man the fort, dig entrenchments, protect a fortification.
Can you elaborate a little more on the specifics of the heavy artillery regiments that you've discussed in your paper?
Like I said, it's according to European terms, they are garrison regiments. Now, the Civil War, this is a very intriguing and very confusing term, because as I found in the New York Historical Society, there is actually two regiments that have the moniker heavy artillery. Take for example the 2nd New York Heavy Artillery. There's an actual heavy artillery regiment which served in New York City from 62 to 65, all the way serving nonstop. Then there's the 2nd New York Heavy Artillery, which was sent to Washington, D.C. in 63, served at Cold Harbor to Petersburg before it got sent back in light of Jubal Early's attack, and was there for the remainder of the war. Now, the heavy artillery battery, or regiment, was in New York. The actual infantry regiment, hodgepodge, thingamajigger, was in Washington. I don't know why they referred to both of them as heavy artillery. Maybe it was because of the guns in the fortresses. I don't know. But it's a really confusing term, to say none the least.
So these regiments never traveled with artillery? They only manned artillery within forts?
Precisely. Although at times of crisis, they could be called upon to man artillery. Although they weren't usually used as that. More often than not, they were used more like mobile engineer units. They were used to construct fortifications, maintain them. The United States Corps of Engineers actually really loved the heavy artillery regiments and were very, very angry at Grant when he ordered them out of the fortresses to reinforce the federal armies, even though he had technically already done it earlier that year, as in the 2nd New York had actually been moved out of Washington earlier that year, in February, attached to Hancock's Corps to provide additional artillery support.
What makes these regiments an important part of Civil War history?
These regiments are important due to the time that they existed at. In 64, they needed more troops, but also, too, they needed various other formations to be included. Raising new regiments would take time, particularly in training them. So you have these regiments, about 26, 27 of them maybe, sitting in Washington, D.C. So, hey, let's bring them. I mean, some of these regiments were almost 2 to 3 times the size of a standard regiment, which a standard regiment, on, at least on paper, was about 1,000 men. Some of these regiments were 3,000, 4,000 men strong. So it's a no-brainer if you needed more men that you would simply go to them and say, hey, I need you.
The Civil War had a huge death total. In your paper, you describe events like the Second Maine Charge, where a tactical error led to many unnecessary deaths. In your opinion, would the total death total of the Civil War be significantly lower without these errors that you describe in your paper?
It's sort of like an interesting question. On one hand, it probably would be, because these men would not be going up into combat. They would be more hesitant to go into combat. But also, too, it's like the war would have lasted longer. So the question is, if the war lasted longer, would there be more deaths or equal amount of deaths if the war did not end in 65? Now, the linear tactics, yes, did have a lot of problems with the combat, but also, too, it's one of the only tactics they knew. And it was the only thing at the time that they knew of how to get the maximum mass effect of the men in an attack.
So in essence, these soldiers weren't ready to do anything besides these linear tactics, and the linear tactics were what was going to get the war ended quickly.
Precisely. They were trained that the linear assault, as in that you form up in straight lines and you attack a fortification, no matter if they're armed with rifles or not. The theory is that you march up, they fire at you, you take casualties, you fire at them, overwhelm them, then you fix bayonets and charge in, breaking their lines, you're through. The problem is that due to the rifle, they can get 2 volleys out probably before you get up close to fire your volley. As in, you're probably going to take many more casualties than what they have for less gain and less casualties for them.
After listening to this podcast and reading your paper, where would be the best place for someone to go to find more about this story?
For the Second Maine, I would recommend the Petersburg Battlefield. They have preserved that particular event very well. You can actually see where the valley is that they charged down into, which was sort of like our version of the charge of the Light Brigade. It was a attack that should have never occurred and was very, very deadly. And I would also, too, for the Second Maine, I would recommend looking at the Maine Historical Society. They recently have made a lot of their documents digitized, and they also, too, produced a mini TV series about them that is very accurate and uses a lot of the documents. For the other regiments, I would recommend going to Cold Harbor, Washington, D.C., see those areas, and then the New York Historical Society has a lot of documents and flags and paintings from the regiments, including the unit muster rolls.
What was the most interesting thing that you came across during the course of researching this topic?
The most interesting thing I think I came across during this project was the various historical societies and how they categorize these regiments. In the New York Historical Society, they categorize these regiments first by their end war distinctions, such as heavy artillery battery, so on and so on. But also, to these particular regiments, also too had a distinction of being volunteer regiments, as having a number running from 1 to, say, 200 or somewhere above that. That's what was interesting, is that first these regiments were volunteers, then they were converted into heavy artillery.
All right, that's all the questions I have for you today. Thank you for listening to Studio 395. More interviews on a wide range of historical topics and subscriptions to our podcast are available on our show page at sites.lib.jmu.edu/studio395. To learn about the history major at James Madison University, please visit www.jmu.edu/history.